This week, it's one of my favorite segments. It's time for our quarterly Security Money Update. How is the Security Weekly 25 Index faring during the pandemic? In the Leadership and Communications section, Tactical versus Strategic, CISOs and Boards Narrow Communication Gap, 5 signs that point to a schism in cybersecurity, 96% of cybersecurity professionals are happy with their roles, and more. Business Security Weekly starts now.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals, by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show where we explore the business of security to improve the security of business. Your trusted source for actionable insights on leadership, communication, and innovation. Get ready for Business Security Weekly. With over half of enterprise security budgets going towards detection and response in 2020, the challenge is investing in solutions that can migrate and scale with your business. ExtraHop helps security teams spot threats up to 95% faster and respond 60% more efficiently in hybrid and multi-cloud environments with cloud-native network detection and response. Kick the tires in the full product demo at securityweekly.com/ExtraHop. The most at-risk industries like financial, tech, and government agencies use web isolation to keep their networks and users secure. The Silo Web Isolation platform by Authenticate allows users to experience the web in full isolation, eliminating the chance of a web-borne cyber attack. You can interact with malicious files and websites without worry, even if you're working remotely. Authenticate enables anyone, anywhere, on any device to experience the web without risk. See how it works at securityweekly.com/authenticate. The question is simple. Have any of the systems on my network been compromised? The answer is harder than it should be. Enter AI Hunter. Active Countermeasures has automated and streamlined techniques used by the best pen testers and threat hunters in the industry to create AI Hunter, a network threat hunting solution that does the first pass of a hunt for you to identify systems that are most likely to be compromised and scores the results on a scale from 0 to 100. You can then research those systems in depth with AI Hunter. Focus your valuable time on the systems that need your expertise with AI Hunter. Sign up for a personal demo today at securityweekly.com/ACM.
Welcome to Business Security Weekly. This is episode number 192, recorded October 19th, 2020. I am your host, Matt Alderman, here in Colorado, but not wearing my Broncos colors today out of respect. But joining me from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island are my Patriot co-host, Paul Astadorian, and Jason Elbert.
What a kicker you have. That's about it.
Thanks, Matt. There was a football game? I don't know. Anyway, moving right along.
True story.
It's the only offense we have is that the kicker can usually get them through the uprights. That's it.
Six times.
Mm-hmm. In our October 22nd technical training, we'll provide a first look at a new free resource that delivers thousands of remedies as a service to bridge the gap between vulnerabilities found and vulnerabilities fixed. On October 28th, learn how to build an integrated security platform in our webcast with Mimecast at 3 o'clock. Visit securityweekly.com/webcasts to see what we have coming up, or visit securityweekly.com/on-demand to view all of our previous recorded webcasts. Would you like to have all of your favorite Security Weekly content at your fingertips? Have a question for one of our illustrious, maybe not Patriots, hosts? Someone from Security Weekly team, or wish you could hang out with the Security Weekly crew and community? Subscribe on your favorite podcast catcher, sign up for our mailing list, and join our Discord server to stay in the loop on all things Security Weekly. Visit securityweekly.com/subscribe. All right, so I have to make some admissions. So I've been tracking the Security Weekly 25 Index. It's been almost over 2 years now. I started tracking data when I joined Security Weekly in November of 2018, but I went back to July of 2018. That's when Tenable went public, because they were one of the ones that I wanted in the index. And so I've been tracking this thing for over 2 years now. And I've had to make 4 changes in the index because 4 companies have gone private. Sophos, Forescout just went recently. Carbon Black was bought by VMware, and there was one other somewhere in the mix. But and I realized this weekend when I was updating everything that every time there's a change, I have to recalculate the index so that the index is consistent and the weightings for the different companies calculate the index are correct. And I realized I had a couple bugs in my formula, so I fixed them all this weekend. So I had to go back and pull some of the historical data to make sure that the index was calculating correctly, because I caught it when I made the change for Forescout this week. So the new graphs have been updated. I dropped them into Discord. Paul, I still haven't figured out how to put them into PPWorks yet.
Yeah, that's a feature request.
Yeah.
Submit the enhancement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now I have to do that. So what did we learn? Well, one, so Forescout did go private. The Advent deal went through in last quarter. And so I had to bring in a new company into the index. Sumo Logic went public. So I swapped the two of them. Mm-hmm. So Sumo Logic came in to replace Forescout in the index. So I'm still at 25.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's good. We didn't have to change the name.
The Security Weekly 24 index.
Right. Just doesn't sound the same.
Pardon the mathematical errors.
So now we just need to keep it that way. If you're going to go public, make sure someone else goes from public to private.
Right. Just kind of swap you in and out.
Yin yang.
But I'm telling you, man, it's a royal pain in the butt to recalculate everything and then make sure all your formulas are updated across 2 years of data sets. But I did it, so it's okay. So where is the index? The index closed at a record on Friday again. So this is the second quarter in a row, Jason. Paul wasn't on last quarters, but you were, and we closed at a record then. We just closed at another record on the index side.
It's absolutely amazing given where we're at. You know, I mean, it's one of those scenarios where I would not expect it during COVID, during a pandemic, during an economic shutdown, I guess you could kind of say.
Sort of.
So I mean,
this is incredible.
We hear the stories about budgets being cut, cutting back, and resource issues, but yet the stats from these vendors, and we'll get into some of the kind of summary data, they're still going up. They're still beating revenue expectations or beating earnings expectations. Mm-hmm. The prices are going up, which means the index is going up. Even the NASDAQ, it didn't close at a record, but it's up 77.26% since I started the index back over 2 years ago. Yeah. I mean, even the NASDAQ's going haywire.
I sit back and I question, did the pandemic force us to do some things that we may have not done? Lean out operations, right? Were we running fat? Were companies running fat? And did it force us to start looking at operational efficiencies to get us through digital? We're talking about quote unquote digital transformation, right? But it forced a lot of organizations to go out there and fast track their technology projects. It really did, right? So I know just my organization ourselves, we really had to do a level of introspection and start looking at our operational efficiencies and pushing them faster than we normally would.
Which means you're making investments in technology.
That's it.
Yep.
Sounds like you're also making investments in some of the security technologies to protect that new technology. And all of these vendors, in some form or fashion, I mean, there's a couple that probably aren't benefiting as much as others. But look, some of them in this index are definitely benefiting from that that kind of change in spend and direction.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So when I look at some of the just summary of earnings, right, revenue beat by 2.97% on average. That's up. I think it was like 1.3% last quarter. So the revenue beats up there. The earnings beat surprise. It's 70% on average higher. That's amazing when you think about it. Yeah, it's crazy. The earnings beats are 70% higher across the board. Tenable turned a profit last quarter for the first time. Now, on an annual basis, it's still not profitable. But there's a lot of companies that were predicted to have negative earnings and actually had positive earnings last quarter, which is a good sign.
Yeah, I'll sit back and I'll say, did this situation that we're in force us to start making investments that we normally would have kind of kicked the can down the road, right? I really think it did, because just seeing some of our customer habits that we have, it started to kick projects in that they were scheduling out a year and a half. And now all of a sudden they're looking at technology investment because they're realizing, hey, wait a minute, while my remote workforce is totally disparate, right? We're not operating out of our brick and mortar facilities anymore. We really need to start investing in the technology, in the security side. But at the same time, now they're looking to divest in other places. They're looking to divest in the brick and mortar facilities, in their offices, right? And now they're saying, wait a minute, we can actually save operational money by investing in technology and getting rid of some of these legacy type items, like offices, physical offices themselves.
Yeah, it's crazy. Just a few ratings, right? So the average analyst rating is a stronger buy across the industry. That's up from last quarter. Best rated stocks, there's three of them, all rated the same. Tenable, Verint, and Rapid7. Verint and Rapid7 were rated the highest last quarter as well. Tenable gets added to that mix. So you see this really interesting thing. Two of the three public vulnerability management companies are two of the highest rated stocks based on the financial analyst ratings, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting, Tenable being highly rated, because we didn't see that for quite some time.
No, not at all.
Because they weren't meeting their numbers. Basically, they weren't meeting their numbers, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, they went public over 2 years ago. Like I said, I started the tracking of the prices at their IPO back in July of 2018. And through over 2 years, they hadn't turned a profit in any given quarter. This was the first quarter. And they're partially getting rewarded for that, I think, from the analysts in their ratings. Finally.
It's interesting. I wonder what they're... Well, when we cover like the Enterprise Security Weekly news, we still kind of, and of course, I mean, no hard feelings. We obviously used to work at Tenable. We cover the industry very, very well, I think, right? And I don't see any like really big innovation coming out of Tenable. The fact that their numbers are up, meaning they're selling more of what they have, right? Rather than really being on the innovation side, where we've seen Qualys and Rapid7, maybe not so much innovation might be the wrong word for it, but diversification of their portfolios, right? Really having new services and products to be offered that's still within their wheelhouse, and their current customers are spending more, and they're attracting new customers because they have new products and services. So I see those two companies growing. Tenable seems to have the same set of products and services. Maybe they're just able to sell it better, right?
I think they are, because some of the... Just to kind of open it up here, we're a Tenable client, right? And what I'm noticing by talking to them is they're actually trying to expand it, because they're having conversations with MSPs now, and they're trying to put the focus into, let's make this a multi-tenant, like a true multi-tenant environment.
They're doubling down.
They're
on
trying
their
to
core.
Go deeper and wider in their existing core is basically what I'm starting to see.
Yeah, and I think they also use the pandemic as a way to get their costs under control. I've seen a lot of changeover over there. I know when we had Richard Steinen on BSW, I think it was BSW, or we did a micro interview with him at the Virtual Hacker Summer Camp. He said, look, when I look at where employees are moving, they're losing employees, right? So they've also done a good job getting their costs under control, which I think is why you saw the shift from losing money to actually turning a profit last quarter.
Again, leveraging this to get operational efficiencies, right?
Worst rated, same three companies as last time: SecureWorks, Checkpoint, and NetScout. Slightly different order, but the same three companies.
Right. So question for me on SecureWorks, right? Because I actually listened to their earnings. Well, not listen. I read the transcript of their earnings call, and the earnings call seemed like they were actually moving in the right direction and getting better. I think they had, you know, their profit margin was more than they've ever recorded. I think, you know, it almost looked like they were on an upswing. So just question as to why they're still on the worst side.
I think it's the way, so I agree with you. Their numbers actually performed really well. The profitability was way up. I think it was like 1,600% or something like that. It was crazy. And the revenues are tracking. I think it has to do a little bit with the model. Remember, managed security service companies that are public also have a high cost structure to them because they have lots of resources under the covers.
It's people. lots of people.
They measure the number of new customers. Is that in the analyst reports and things like that? Like number
some of them are.
Net new business, right? Isn't that?
Yeah.
I just think that if I were to look at SecureWorks, again, more from like the enterprise security side, not so much the stock side, I would say that they're struggling to gain new customers because there's other players in the market that are more kind of the niche players, right? That could be more attractive and making it more difficult for SecureWorks to gain net new business when you've got other players.
Yeah.
We just did a Corey from DeepWatch is coming on talking about he's not going to talk about the market, but when we know Corey, we talked a little bit about the market, right? And what I see is based on what Corey described DeepWatch as an example, they're more niche kind of players, true, right? We're going to do your MDR. We're going to do a really good job of it, and we're going to have a differentiator in the market.
That, right.
And that's what we're going to focus on. I'm going to do it much better than some of the larger ones where you may get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, honestly, you know, from a, let's call it a customer satisfaction perspective, I always knew there were issues with SecureWorks, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I hear it from our customers. I heard
all the
from,
big MSPs.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it's a high cost model. Mm-hmm. So probably some financial analysts just don't like the model where you take a pure play software company like a Qualys, even a Tenable that doesn't have a lot of services in the mix. Yep. There's not much to dilute the product side of the business because you don't have a lot of services under the cover. I think it's more of the model than anything else for them.
No, that makes sense.
Let's see. Best performer, SailPoint again. Mm-hmm. They've just continued to outperform expectations. I love the space, as everybody knows, on the identity side. Varonis outperformed this quarter, which is good. They've kind of been a little laggard the past.
I'll say they're one of those examples of operational efficiency and changing their pricing model. Right? Varonis changed their pricing model because, again, to be transparent, I'm a Varonis client, right? We use that within our organization. And they really did a good job of changing their pricing model. Because it was complicated. Their licensing was complicated and expensive. And honestly, they're shifting. So I'm proud to see them on here.
That's good. Worst performers: Splunk, the NetScout. Now Splunk missed on the revenue side. They did fine on the earnings side. But this is one of the rare misses for Splunk since they've been public. It was an interesting view because I was like, wait, I mean Splunk, they missed? I mean, that doesn't happen.
Right.
So, and maybe part of it is because of some of the on-prem and the adjustments in the model a little bit, maybe. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see going forward, do we see more misses out of Splunk or was just this a blip?
Right, right. I mean, is it also there's competition in the market?
There is. There's a bunch of newer players.
Yep, exactly.
They're all coming after Splunk's pricing model.
Yep.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, every analyst I talk to, the biggest concern they have with Splunk is that drop in revenue because people think it's expensive. Are they starting to lose some share to some of the newer players, really addressing the data and the cost
side
of this?
And we're going to talk about that in a bit.
I mean, there's no secret there either, though. I mean, that's been fully out in the open for some time.
But this is the first time you've actually seen it play out in their earnings report.
Right, right.
Yeah. Sumo Logic goes public. Successful IPO. September 27th. Mm-hmm. They opened at 22. They priced it at 22. They closed the day at 26.88. It's like a 22% increase. They put their market cap over $2 billion, which qualified them for the index. Mm-hmm. So they replaced Forescout, who came out of the model. Also, Palantir. Palantir had this really interesting debut on the market. It wasn't officially an IPO. They just started trading on the market.
Yeah.
They debuted at $9.50 a share on the last day of the quarter on September 30th. Mm-hmm. They've got like a $15 billion market cap with that price.
Yeah. I mean, just to go back to the Sumo Logic one, I mean, I was very surprised there wasn't a little bit more news about it, but then I went back and I looked at it, and the day before Snowflake launched their IPO. And I mean, if you know anything about Snowflake, they're coming in and they're bulldozing. The CEO was the CEO of ServiceNow. He came in and I mean, he's really going in there and bulldozing the market. So that's why I think we didn't see as
what
much
Snowflake
noise.
What does Snowflake do again? I've heard of them. I haven't looked at them.
It's a data lake. Oh, but they're getting into the security side too.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a good my fraternity brother who I graduated with at Case works for them in their security team, and he was asking me some questions about, you know, here's what we're thinking about and some other stuff. So it's interesting. I didn't realize they went public the day before.
It was like the day before, a couple of days before, something like that. But because I figured I'd hear a lot more noise on that, but Snowflake IPO went. But I mean, again, there's a lot of competition. You have Datadog, you have New Relic, you have all these other companies out there. Snowflake getting in the game, right? So a lot of competition in the space.
Yeah. And it looks like McAfee is planning for an IPO in Q4. So they announced they filed for an IPO. I didn't see a timeline for it yet, but my guess is it could hit in Q4.
Yeah.
Security Weekly 26 coming soon.
round and round we go, though.
I think it's interesting to see that note, right?
Endpoint players in and out. But yeah, this is McAfee's second time.
That's it. Yeah. IPO. But wasn't the last one like 7 billion or something crazy like that? It was like a massive number, I think. And what was it, 2011?
Yeah. And then they got bought by Intel. Mm-hmm. They were part of Intel for a while, then spun out a separate entity. And now they're looking to go back into the market. Right, so that'll be an interesting one.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah.
And I looked at expectations. They're looking at, they could raise as much as $814 million out of this one.
Interesting to see what they do with it and how they propel growth, being labeled as the traditional antivirus vendor.
Right.
How do you stay competitive in today's endpoint market?
Yeah. Well, and they had some interesting capability. You know, they bought Nitro, right? They had the MVM product, which is the McAfee Vulnerability Manager, the old Foundstone product. Mm-hmm. When they spun back out, they killed MVM. I think they still have Nitro. So they've tried to move away from just the endpoint, Paul.
Yeah, because EPO was like a whole management framework, right? That I never really used it. Talked to some people that were using it. Enterprise Policy Orchestrator or something like that, right? Wasn't that EPO McAfee thing, right?
Yep. Yeah. I still think that, EPO I still think is one of their big differentiators.
I think so too, yeah.
But as you look at what's happened to the endpoint market, they've got to do more than just EPO and antivirus to survive. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
100%.
I did pull a bunch of private funding. There's some big ones in here. I mean, SNCC, a former sponsor, raised $200 million last quarter. That's a big number.
Yep.
Auth0 raised $120 million. Tanium raised $100 million and then followed that just like a week or so ago with another couple hundred million.
Right.
I mean, Tanium's raises are just crazy.
Yeah.
Perimeter 81 had $40 million.
Right.
So that, you know, some good raises in here. I mean, people are still making investments in the market, which I think is good.
Yeah, and I think Perimeter 81 is kind of jumping on that whole sassy, you know, Gartner fire that's going on right now.
They are.
You know, and it's one of those things where I look back and sassy technically has criteria to become a sassy provider. And one thing I couldn't find on Perimeter 81 is one of the things you have to have is that global distribution. I couldn't find anything on their website about global distribution, like pops all over the world. I didn't see anything. So it'd be interesting to dig a little bit deeper there.
I can ask them. I'm doing a webinar with
them. Are you? Yeah.
Yeah, coming up. I mean, the team is super solid over there at Perimeter 81.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they know their stuff. So
yeah, I mean, again, when I start looking at these providers, I start looking at all the criteria that it takes to become that, that secure access service edge qualified vendor. And I'd love to learn more about their global distribution. No doubt about it.
We will get that opportunity soon. Mm-hmm. Couple large acquisitions. Signal Sciences, sponsor for this show, been a longtime sponsor. For the network. I mean, they've been a longtime sponsor, Paul.
Yeah.
I mean, that Fastly acquisition, $775 million. I mean, that's just a huge acquisition.
One of the larger ones in our industry as a whole.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, seed numbers get above 500 million. You're in a list, a short list, basically, right? Because, I mean, Duo at $2.35 billion, to me, I believe, is one of the largest. McAfee might have been slightly larger than that. But you also probably have to factor in the time at which they were acquired, right? Because getting acquired 10 years ago isn't the same as today. Right. So that'd be an interesting study for you, Matt, the top 5 acquisitions in security.
Yeah, in our space.
Yep. But take into account the timing, right?
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Crypsis Group by Palo Alto was $265 million. SaltStack, also a former sponsor, acquired by VMware. Delve Labs, acquired by SecureWorks. A few, and then a couple smaller ones. OPAC by Fortinet, Undefined Labs by Datadog, and Integris by OneTrust kind of round out some of the big acquisitions last quarter. But there's still activity in the space. And I think, as we talked about it at the opening, right, how do you fare in a pandemic? Well, if you're hitting all-time high prices, you're outperforming on revenue and earnings, investments still coming in, acquisitions are still happening. Those are all positive signs for the industry.
Still a healthy market.
Agreed.
For sure.
Yes.
Well, and probably growing too. I mean, I think it's slightly understated. I mean, we're still on a fast track for growth in all these companies. Mm-hmm. When you just look at the stock performance, the funding raises, and the acquisitions, this is a really active, very healthy market. And I mean, my prediction is it continues to grow this way for the foreseeable future, because as we use more technology, we need security rate coupled along with it.
Yes, we do. Well, we're going to cover the other side of security on the news side with some articles here in a second. So we're going to take a quick break and then cover those leadership and communications articles for this week.
DeepWatch provides innovative managed security services that empower organizations to be more resilient against today's evolving cyber threats. DeepWatch offers game-changing capabilities in managed detection and response, managed endpoint detection and response, and vulnerability management, all delivered through a unique squad model, a dedicated group of security experts that works directly with each client. From managed security operations to threat hunting to continuous measurement of security readiness, DeepWatch is advancing the service of managed security. Measure your SecOps maturity for free by visiting securityweekly.com/DeepWatch. Most breaches are caused by exploiting oversights in basic cybersecurity fundamentals, but complex hybrid multi-cloud infrastructures make cybersecurity hygiene challenging. Red Seal can help. It shows you what's on your network, how it's connected, and the associated risk across public cloud, private cloud, and physical environments. With Red Seal, you'll get control of your cybersecurity fundamentals so you can protect your organization from the inevitable attack vectors and reduce your cyber risk. For more information, visit securityweekly.com/Red Seal. Cyber risk and compliance automation is finally here. Arduous legacy GRC systems cannot support the powerful real-time automation and oversight that organizations require to take risks that matter and compete in today's business climate. CyberSaint ingests data from your existing tech stack to deliver unprecedented patented automation and visibility into enterprise risk and compliance. Don't get left behind. See why the most forward-thinking CISOs and business leaders of Fortune 500 and more partner with CyberSaint. Maximize your cybersecurity program today by visiting securityweekly.com/CyberSaintBSW.
Welcome back to Business Security Weekly. I am your host, Matt Alderman, joined by Paul Asadorian and Jason Albuquerque. Security Weekly, in partnership with Cyber Risk Alliance, is excited to present Security Weekly Unlocked on December 10th, 2020. This one-day virtual event wraps with the 15th anniversary edition of Paul's Security Weekly live on our YouTube channel and maybe a couple other live streams. Visit securityweekly.com/unlock to view the agenda and for free. We got 59 submissions, call for speakers for the Unlocked event. I want to thank the entire community. We only had spots for 15, so we maximized as much as we could. We are going to have a jam-packed agenda for that event. Also, join Amit Barakat, co-founder and CEO of Perimeter 81, and Paul Asadorian for a technical deep dive into the problems inherent in legacy VPN technology. Together, they will explore solutions for the modern workforce and how momentum towards perimeterless architecture is helping redefine the future of cybersecurity. Register now by visiting securityweekly.com/perimeter81. There's the official call for the
nice for let's talk about global distribution. I love it.
I guess you have a topic for that one already.
Yeah, all right. You should join and ask. Right, join the webcast.
I will yeah. Absolutely,
there you go. Articles. So for all those playing at home, start at the bottom and work your way up. It is another feature request for PPWorks to order the stories the way you want to cover them. I added them in one direction, and then they got imported in the opposite direction. So CISO Stress Buster, 7 Tips for Weathering Cybersecurity Storms. This is a Microsoft security blog. What do you think, Jason?
I actually love this article. I really, really like this article, honestly. You know, for me, you sit back and security teams are still looked at as a cost center, right? I mean, within the organization. They're still being viewed as a cost center. They're still being viewed as, and I hate every... It, sends a chill up my spine, insurance to the organization, right? I really hate that. And bringing change to an organization is really, really tough. You know, I've done it within my organization. I feel like I've done it fairly successfully, but it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy to bring that mindset that, you know, security can truly be an enabler of the business, can really be a business partner. So going through some of these tips on how you can, you know, really keep your mind in gear and some tips of partnering with the organization. I liked the article. I really, really liked it.
Yeah, I think it nicely summarizes what we've talked about largely in the show pretty much since its inception. Mm-hmm. There's really not much new in this article that we haven't talked about.
No, but they did a good job of bringing it to reality within their organization, telling the story. This was a good tell the story of how they did it within their organization, right? So business engagement makes a difference. That was one of them, right? They really go through talking about the value, and they used stories to do that, of engaging with other managers within the business units, right? And how they had successes. Again, it's one of those things where I think telling the reality of it versus just an article of how they did it within Microsoft and how those leaders did it within their organization, I think it makes a difference.
One thing I would like to know from Microsoft along the lines of this article is, in my experience, when I speak with folks from Microsoft, you know, number one, they're awesome. Number two, many folks that I speak with have been there for a really long time. They find a home at Microsoft as engineers, and they stay there. And that is something I believe, and this is just an observation, not based on any scientific fact, but in my observation, they tend to stay at Microsoft. Whereas you look at firms from Silicon Valley, you look at Google and Facebook and Apple, the turnover is much higher. I mean, personally, I've spoken with a lot of people and have friends that kind of do the dance between and Twitter thrown into the mix. Those are all very Silicon Valley-based companies. There's a lot more turnover. You go to Microsoft, they're outside of that Silicon Valley mentality. And I think that's really helped them. And they've been able to build this culture where they can actually keep that talent in-house, which is super. I mean, as we know,
is the culture.
Keeping talent is super important.
100%. I couldn't agree more, right?
But how do they do that? I want to know. I mean, I made a speculation as to the nature of geographic location and perhaps speaking a little bit to culture, but I'd love to see a Microsoft article or a podcast or something that really, what's the secret sauce behind keeping all of those talented people employed at Microsoft and really engaged and loving what they do? When I speak to those people that have been there 10, 20 years, they're still excited and love what they do, which is a real, true accomplishment.
Is part of it, though, not just saying these things, but doing these things?
But actually doing these things speaks to that. We
can sit here all day and say, do this, do this, do this. But if your organization doesn't support this kind of a culture, it's not going to be successful, right? I mean, just hire and build the right talent. Well,
For me, hire and
build the right talent means don't just hire, build. Building means keeping people around.
Yes, exactly.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you just talked about that success factor of hiring and building the right talent. You have to have apprenticeship programs. We'll talk about that later. You have to have a good culture to want to keep people around. And you have to give them a roadmap on how their career trajectory is going to go within the organization. And that's some of the stories they told in this article.
I thought, you know, they gave you five really good tips at the end to kind of summarize it under that seventh point. So look, CISOs don't own security incidents, they manage them. CISOs need access to all business units for success. CISOs need to understand the business to be effective. Please mentor them.
I highlighted that. Mentorship.
That was one that
mentorship
wasn't
underlined. Is building the talent. You're not just hiring them, you're building them. And in order to build, you have to have, like I said, apprenticeship programs. And there is a such thing as a management apprenticeship program, a leadership apprenticeship program. You can have that.
CISOs need collaboration with their peers, so don't isolate them. And CISOs need to be involved in all technology decisions to manage risks. Five great tips. That to me was like, that's just the icing, right?
That was.
Yeah.
And again, walk the walk, don't talk the talk. So if you walk the walk, you'll be successful, kind of like what this article brought up.
Yeah, definitely. 91% of survey respondents say their boards have increased cybersecurity investment response due to COVID-19 pandemic. Now, whenever we see survey results, okay, how many? Global survey, almost 1,000 CISOs. So that's a pretty good set, a sample set. What do you think, Jason? I mean, we've talked about we were talking about this in the last segment. We were talking about two pieces of this, right? One is we've seen budgets get stressed, but as you were saying, look, we're also getting, we're putting technology in place, we're spending money. Sure. So it looks like budgets are increasing, which aligns to the survey as well.
In many instances, CEOs and boards of directors know cybersecurity needs to be a business initiative. On the other hand, they don't 100% understand what we do. So now it's on us to make sure we're doing the right thing. Because again, you know, the article lists tactical versus strategic. If you're tactical with that power, right, with great power comes great responsibility. If you're tactical with that power, you're going to end up with a lot of shelfware tools that aren't adopted or knee-jerk reactions in purchasing that you're going to have inadequate solutions, right? I mean, the article says that. And it's true. You have to be, you still have to take that power and be strategic. Because I honestly believe that we still have a lot of work to do to educate board of directors and educate CEOs and educate the other leaders in our organization.
Help me out though. How does security become revenue generation?
It depends on your vertical though.
It's unique to the vertical and unique to the organization.
It has to
it's
be.
Not the right an- same answer.
It's not
for
the
everyone.
Same answer for every organization, right? In my field, which is technology managed services and professional services, it's having security up front in the design of everything we do, from implementations to our managed services to our architecture. It's including security there and leveraging that as a differentiator to our competitors, right?
Yeah.
And in another industry, it could be something else.
Streamlining processes not only helps reduce cost, mm-hmm. but you're building a differentiator in the market, which can lead to more revenue.
100%.
But that's different from IT security. Mm-hmm. How do you increase revenue by making all employees use some kind of multi-factor, right? That to me is the more difficult one that I come down to.
Sure,
right?
But again, it's tactical versus strategic things, right? So MFA on everybody is a tactical piece that could mm-hmm. lead up in, you know, if you combine it with all the other things you're doing, sure, it could be a differentiator.
Gotcha.
But it by itself may not be.
That's right. That's right.
I think that's where people get stuck.
It's the vertical you're in and finding that niche to make security top of mind in something that if you put it in the mindset of, if I'm a salesperson within the organization, how can I speak to security to make us different than the competition, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. To talk about that differentiator. And that's what I've tried to do within my organization. And you can do it within your own vertical. I mean, let's say insurance. Well, how we're protecting your data compared to our competition may be a differentiator, right?
Right.
I mean, you really gotta think about how it can make a difference in the sell.
Yes. This next article was interesting. It's a very long article, but I thought it was a very interesting article. It's the 5 signs that point to a schism in cybersecurity.
What a great word.
Now, Matt, we did cover this article on Paul Security Weekly.
Oh,
you did?
Except we honed in on really one list in here. We thanked the author, publicly recognized. I don't think we got the person's name. PrivSec Guy is the author's name on Medium. And we talked about, he had a list, doing cybersecurity correctly requires enterprise-level organizations too. He has a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 things. We covered those in great detail, but did not talk about anything in the rest of the article on purpose. Maybe there was some overlap there, but
maybe not.
We didn't. Like, we really just looked at that list and used it as a talking point. And we concluded that this was a great article. Awesome that you also picked it up. It means it's an absolute must-read for all of our audience members.
It is, and I think What he points out here is that there are some things we've known that we almost kind of make excuses about.
Yeah.
And the one that really came out is employers keep saying there's a skills gap.
Yep.
And he says, we keep saying it, but he said, maybe we're just bad at hiring talent and paying them what they're worth. I mean, he just bluntly comes out and says,
what are we
right?
doing about that, right? And again, that goes back to the first article we talked about. I mean, it literally ties back to that. Hire and build. You have to hire and build. And hey, by the way, that mind map that's in this article, I love that. I use it all over the place because so many executives think of cybersecurity as just the technical. And I throw that mind map out there and you literally get that holy shh.
But right? it sounds holy like that's what he's alluding to when he talks about penetration testing, that that's just an exercise in your tactical aspect of your business, mm-hmm. right? Tactical yep. aspect of right. your technology, not necessarily all of those other thought domains when we right. think about role-based access control and how that's applied to all of our users, yeah. employees, customers, partners, across all of our different technology stacks. And
100%.
So and that's just one area. I'm really just speaking to identity.
Right. One
thing. Yeah. Well, and when you tie points 2, 3, and 4 together, you get this really interesting realization that cybersecurity is really complex. It's a lot of things. It's mm-hmm. a lot of different pieces to the mind map. We say there's a skills gap shortage, but we don't know how to hire. And yet we don't have an apprentice program to bring new talent into our mm-hmm. industry.
Yep.
these three just compound each other to the point where, how do we ever get ahead of this?
And self-fulfilling
prophecy.
That's
the point of the article.
It's right. A self-fulfilling prophecy, right? If we're not doing the work to make sure we're building the talent, we're hiring in the right areas. I mean, look at all the domains that are just in that mind map, and then all the subdomains that are in there. And, you know, big shout out to Henry Jiang, who puts this out. You know, he did version one, and now this is version two, because it's very useful to bring to another executive to show them the reality. And then not only to say, here's everything that that exists within a cybersecurity domain, just picture how deep each one of these goes as well, right? So it just brings a level of reality. So big shout out to him for building this and you know, having this for other executives to be able to use. But it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. We're not doing the diligence. We've talked about it on the show. We need to change the way we hire. I'm a big fan of apprenticeship programs. Take the basic aptitude. I always say, if you have the right attitude and the right aptitude, I can bring you into the team and we can get you to where you need to be. We need to be doing more of that.
Yeah. And you tie that into this next story about what's actually happening. An apprentice program starts to solve some of this, mm-hmm. because we can't find the help we need. Well, because we don't have
I just want to point out that we haven't even fully impacted on this show everything that was written by PrivSec Guy, and there's other points in there. You keep reading the article. Like, mm-hmm. You got to make sure you go read the whole.
It's a great article.
It's a great article. Probably a nomination for one of the top blog posts this year in all of InfoSec.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's a long article, but I was trying to pull all the pieces together.
Sure. Now I just want to point that out. I didn't want people to think that was the whole article, because we now covered it on two shows and didn't cover the whole thing yet.
Right, props on the content.
Yeah.
Big props on the content.
Which means on Wednesday we'll cover... We'll
probably have to cover another aspect of it. Yeah, sure.
ESW wraps up the storyline on this one.
We keep talking about it until we figure out who the person is that wrote it so we can bring them on the show.
That's it.
Right.
100%.
PrivSec Guy, you're welcome to come on.
Yeah. Make sure it's BSW, because I want to be part of the conversation.
There you go. You're in a fight over.
Right.
I already called dibs.
But then you look at, we can't find the talent. Oh, yeah, we have more needs. Nobody wants to make a move. Because we're not embracing
the
ability to bring these people
Build the talent.
Yeah.
Build the talent. We can do it. The only thing that, and I don't know if it was this article or another one that I pulled. Oh, yeah, it was this article. The one thing for me that was kind of like sad face emoji was attitudes towards InfoSec as a career are lukewarm and they're going down. For me, that stinks, because I want more people to want to be in the industry. So, but what that also does is it motivates the hell out of me to start getting in front of more people to educate them on the industry.
Is it because they view the field of cybersecurity as the amount of skills they have to acquire to be a cybersecurity professional as almost insurmountable? Is that how we're presenting ourselves?
I don't think it actually said anything to that, but I think it's say easy, do hard.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it turns people off. Again, I think if you take people with the right attitude and the right aptitude and you groom them on a career path that can get them into one of those many domains that we saw on that mind map in mm-hmm. the previous article, I think now you can start career pathing.
Well, that's interesting. And I like what you're saying, because it means there's all those different domains in the mind map, as we saw in the previous article, that people don't realize that each of those areas are a pathway into the industry. Once you get into one of those areas, maybe you become an expert in one of those areas. Mm-hmm. In that process, what I've observed is that you start to garner and gain some knowledge in those other areas that may be enough that at some point you're like, hey, I can pivot.
You can shift.
I can go from security researcher to CEO or CSO. Yep. I can go from, you know, being in the help desk and doing operational IT and IT security to being an entrepreneur. Like those are
Once you get even your just foot sticking in, right? Even just sticking into that mind map, it could be, I can go from governance to privacy officer or something like that, right? I mean, it's one of those scenarios where it's a beautiful thing how wide and deep cybersecurity goes within technology, that it gives so many options.
We do a bad job of evangelizing opportunities. When someone's first getting in, they're so overwhelmed, they don't understand half the acronyms that we're using and terminology and how it all fits together that the vision is lost on everything that we've got going on in cybersecurity. Yeah. And that could be something that we need to
fix.
I'm the first one to admit that we've got some issues in this area, and we need, as voices, we need to work to fix them, right?
We really do. And again, I think some of the stigma is that every piece of cybersecurity is uber highly technical. Right. And it's not.
It's not. No, you're right.
It's not. Mm-mm. No, it's not. And it, if you get in the industry, the trends are saying, look, we're happy. We're happy with our jobs. We like mm-hmm. how we're getting paid. The question is, how do you get in? Right. And I think what's interesting in that mind map that's embedded in that article that we keep talking about mm-hmm. is there are so many routes in, and they don't have to be technical. Remember, right. I started very technical and then went more to a compliance third-party vendor risk yeah. management. That was not a technical role. That was a process role. That was organizing chaos.
Right. What's interesting is it doesn't have to be expensive to get into this field. And as I mentor various people getting into this field, I come across these little nuggets. I don't want to name names, but in a certain state like Rhode Island, you can go to a community college
yes.
for free.
Yes.
I don't know what the qualifications are to receive 2 years of school for free, but it's out there. I don't understand the requirements. Mm. Then you can go to another school that has a cybersecurity program in a state like Rhode Island, mm-hmm. and 100% of those credits will transfer. You've just done 2 years of school for free. You can get into a degree program, which, by the way, has a pretty high salary on average yes. of graduating from that program in cybersecurity, which I'm like, why would you not do that? Why people that would even consider getting this field not choose right. that route? I'm like, that's an awesome path.
And for me, even if you don't qualify for free, it's not.
It's not expensive.
Super. The community yeah. college for 2 years is going to get you in the door.
Yes.
Get the basic education you need.
Fraction of the cost.
Fraction of the cost. And then, hey, you want to know what? You still could go to another state university
right.
for your last 2 years and still won't break the bank.
But let's say you use that 2 years to figure out where you want to be.
Yeah.
Maybe I want to be a software developer. Maybe I don't want to be in security. Maybe right. I want to be in networking. Right. Hey, use those first 2 years to figure it out. What's wrong with that?
But high school kids, the students need us to be saying this
yes,
to them.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Right. Too much emphasis is put on that 4-year degree.
We need to be out there speaking to the students, right? Mm-hmm. This is the main reason why I volunteer with, the Tech Collective, and why I volunteer with PTech, which is an inner city urban school helping push computer science.
Right.
This is why I meet with Girl Scouts every year and get them all 3 cybersecurity badges.
Yep.
We, as leaders in the industry, need to be promoting that. Otherwise, that snowball that I just talked about people not, being attracted to cybersecurity.
We
cannot do that. So we need to be out there evangelizing. We need to volunteer more of our time speaking to mm-hmm. middle school, high school, and just in college students.
Yeah.
We really, agreed. Really do.
Yeah. I mean, we've got to get the word out that there is a path.
There's a place for you here.
Yeah, and there's an industry that needs mm-hmm. help, right? We need this talent.
Mm-hmm, right.
We need to hire these resources. Mm-hmm. We just have to educate people that, one, this industry exists.
Right.
That's part of it, right? But number two, this is a way to get into it very cost-effectively
Absolutely.
From an education perspective and grow your career. I mean, how many college kids are struggling right now because they graduated with degrees in areas that are like completely shut down? Like I take Renee, for
right.
example, right? She goes to school, she graduates in 3 years with mm-hmm. a 4-year degree in hospitality management, and there's not a physical event anywhere in the world.
Right, right.
She had to shift. So now she's doing that with virtual events, which is great.
Right.
But how many other kids couldn't make that shift? And here's an industry just begging for people.
And Matt, that's a great point. I call it the disenfranchised workforce, right? Either students getting out of school with $250,000 in debt or even more than that in debt, and then they can't land a job that makes them more than $50,000 a year. Well, how do you take advantage of that disenfranchised workforce and say, hey, wait a minute, there could be a place for you here, right? And it's really finding those target areas to help bring people in, because there could be some really, really good talent out there that we're just missing.
Yeah. Oh, we know there's good talent out there that we're missing.
Right.
We just got to figure out how to go tap into it and make it easy to bring them in mm-hmm. and get HR departments out of the way, making everybody have bachelor's of science degrees in engineering to get a security job.
But whose job is it to educate the HR folks, because they don't know any better? It's the way it's always been. We're a different animal. We're in a different time, right? So I think I truly put it back on folks like myself to change the direction we're going. We really need to change this. It's up to us to do it.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me. Great discussion. Some great articles in here for people to read. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening. And we'll see you next week on Business Security Weekly.